Thank you for having me here today. We've been working for a very long time with Liz and Doug, especially when it comes to Christmas time. And when they popped in a little while ago to have a chat about our Christmas hampers, I asked whether there was an opportunity to come and share our story in a little bit more detail with all of you. Kevin's right. A lot of people come to Helping Hands and see it as an op shop, but there's a whole lot more that goes on behind the scenes. So there's a couple of things that I will try and share in pictures and words with you today. It's a hard place to try and explain without being there in person, but I will certainly do my best. Normally I just press a button, but I'm hoping that we can. Perfect. So apart from the op shops, which are there to raise all of the money that we need to run our programs in a sustainable way, we don't have any sort of government funding. We do it ourselves. The money that we raise goes into three main areas. So the one that you would all be most familiar with is our food aid program. And I'll talk in depth about that. The other two things that I will touch on are our material aid program. And then we run quite a range of activities that focus on social isolation. And I'll finish up with that because it's something that I'm really proud of. So our food program, we call it our community pantry. We have one in Airport West, just down the road, and one in Sunshine. They're set up a little bit like a shopping center, a supermarket. And what we knew from the outset was that we always wanted to make sure that people who were coming to us who needed support had the opportunity to choose what they wanted, which I can tell you is really important. And I guess it was my thinking that led that. I was a mum with small children, and I would reflect and think if I was ever in this position and somebody gave me a box of muesli, they might well have given me nothing because my kids wouldn't have eaten the muesli. So there's, at an initial level, some common sense behind letting people choose the things that are going to be most useful to them. But the other part of that equation is most of the people who have come to us have had most of their choices taken away. They're not sitting down and writing a shopping list and popping over to Coles or Safeway to see what they might like. They're dependent on what we have to give them. And most of them are in circumstances that are not what they're used to, particularly a lot of our domestic violence mums. They're in a safe space, and what they're just trying to do is create a little bit of normal for their kids. And so being able to choose the box of Cocoa Pops is really important at that particular time. The photo that you can see is of our fruit and veg shed. So this is where all the action happens behind the scenes. Every day we receive deliveries from all of the food rescue organisations that you would be familiar with. So OzHarvest, Second Bite and Fair Share. We also buy in every week from Foodbank at a cost of about $4,000 a week. Rescue food isn't all that it's cracked up to be. Sometimes they shouldn't have tried to rescue it. They should have just put it in the bin to start with. And so the food that comes in through these doors comes in all shapes and sizes. And we have an amazing team of volunteers on hand every day to try and sort through it. Some of it does go to the bin. When we say bin, we mean that very loosely. We have a whole range of people. We have a goat farmer. We have people with chickens. We have people who compost. So we try and avoid sending anything to landfill. But we really strive to make sure that the fruit and veggies that we're giving everybody every day are of good quality. They're things that you would buy from a supermarket. Can we hit the next slide, please? There you go. Very proudly, there's one of our fruit and veg boxes. So when somebody comes to our community pantry, can we one more? That's the fruit and veg boxes all packed up and ready to go. We pack 70 of these every day at the moment. And there's all of our vans who all just happened to show up at one time and we got to take a great photo. One more, sorry. It's not only fruit and vegetables that arrives through that door. our deliveries usually come like this. So they come by the pallet load and they're generally mixed. They're stuff that the supermarkets are wanting to get rid of on a particular day. And so sometimes there's frozen produce in there. Sometimes there's stuff that needs to be refrigerated. And then sprinkled across all of that is a whole lot of fruit and veg. And so we probably get about 6 of these pallets a day. And it's these volunteers who work really hard to pull that apart and to make sure that we can salvage as much as we can and pass it on to families who need some support. Next one. This is inside our community pantry. So it's a big job every day to stock the shelves. We try to make sure that there is always the basics. So you will always find pasta and rice. You will always find basics that can be used to make a meal. So a lot of canned goods. You'll also find lots of treats in there because right from the onset, it was something we wanted to ensure. And it comes back to that making things a little bit normal. Very, very early on, I was working with a family in rural Victoria. And we had bought a whole lot of food up to share with their small community. And I actually got a letter from one of the mums. And she said, you know, because of you, my kids don't know we're poor. They have the same snacks in their lunchbox as the other kids at school. And that has very much stuck with me. And so we always make sure, as best as we can, that there are always snacks on our shelves. One more. I want to talk a little bit about the people who come to our pantries. I think there's a bit of a misconception in the community about who needs aid. Obviously, there's people who have needed support for long amounts of time, people who haven't been working, people who rely on this sort of support. And we're there to make sure that we can address that need at a basic level. But what we're seeing at the moment, and I've been doing it for a long time now, 17 years. I've never seen the amount of demand across our local communities that we're seeing now. Every day, and that's not an exaggeration, it's every day, people are coming to us who have never needed support before. People who are in families where perhaps both parents are working and the kids are in school. But they're living week to week. And every time the rent or the mortgage goes up and the groceries go up and the petrol goes up, all of a sudden there's not enough money to buy the food. The way we set up our charity supports that because our op shops are a great place to shop, but they're also a really soft landing space for people who have to put their hand up for the first time. All of our staff and volunteers are pretty well trained at identifying where there is a potential need for support. And it comes in lots of ways. It might be the mum who comes in and literally sits on one of her couches while the kids play. And when you walk past and say hello, she'll say, there's the thing on the other side of the car park. What's that? That's our food pantry. Let's get you up and get you registered. Is that something you can use? And you take that pressure away of needing to put your hand up. Other times it's a lot more obvious. People coming to us, lots of tears, lots of need for support. And so having the op shop and having our dining room and having our food pantry right across the road, right across the car park, seems to work. It seems to create a space where people can come and know they're going to get support. This is our warehouse. So when I say we run a material aid program, that's the other side of food aid. So for us, material aid is white goods. It's bedding, so beds and mattresses and pillows. It's furniture. And that's what we keep in our warehouse here. We work with about 40 other charity organizations and they refer their clients to us. So people who have been assessed as needing some support. And again, it comes in all shapes and sizes and it can happen so quickly. you know, sometimes it's a mum whose fridge is broken down and she just doesn't have the money to buy a new fridge, and so they'll be referred to us. Sometimes it's a domestic violence victim who has been placed in a safe house, but those safe houses are generally empty when you move in. And so we provide all of the material aid that is required to turn that house into a home. And because of the nature of our shops, we can scale that up or down. Most often we scale it up. So yes, we have all of this stuff that we can deliver to a house, but we can also, with our volunteers, make sure that that family is getting the knives and forks and the plates and the toaster and the kettle and all the bits that go into making up a home, including toys for the kids and clothes. Sorry, I've jumped you back and forward a little bit. The last, what time, how long have I got, Gavin? Keep going? Keep going. Plenty of time. Okay, because I can talk forever. The other thing we do at our Airport West site is we run a community dining room. And this starts to fit into that social isolation bucket. We started this as a small project and we had some ladies baking some scones for us. Today, we have between 70 and 80 people every day who come for lunch. Lunch is a $3 donation if you can afford it. It's a hot lunch. There's always soup followed by a hot lunch. There's always dessert. And then there's morning tea and afternoon tea right through the day. That's free. I think this picture captures really well what that little community dining room has become, because people who come for lunch come in all shapes and sizes. It's always such a beautiful mix of volunteers, of staff, of customers, of clients, and also our special needs kids who form part of our assisted volunteer program. A lot of people come because they don't have anyone at home. They come because this is a place they know they can find somebody to have a cup of tea with and have a chat to. And so it is always busy. It is never empty. And the two ladies who run our kitchen do an amazing job because they look at what comes in from that rescue food picture I showed you. It's a bit like, what's the cooking show on TV? MasterChef, where they have the mystery box and you get given some stuff and you have to turn it into a meal. They do that every day, but they do it for 70, 80 people. Some days it's pasta, other days it's full roast lamb. Roast lamb day, people seem to just know and the queue is up the hallway. It's very popular. But again, for $3, it's a hot meal and it's a bit of an outing. To be honest, it's a place where you can connect with people. The last photos that you're zooming through are of our assisted volunteers program. So this is the bit that I'm really proud of. I guess as a charity and as a board of management, we have a really strong belief that everybody should have the opportunity to volunteer. There's a whole lot of good things that come from volunteering. There's connection with people. There's the opportunity to be meaningful and engage in meaningful work. There's the opportunity to feel valued and contribute to a larger program. And all of those things are really, really important. What we know is that we have a group of people in the community who need a little bit of extra support to be able to volunteer. And that can be for a whole lot of reasons. It might be because they're on the autism spectrum. It might be because they struggle with high anxiety. It might be because they're frail aged. Our oldest member of this team is 92. And what they just need is a little bit of help to make their volunteering journey a successful one. So anytime that you come to Helping Hands, you will meet, I keep calling them kids, but they've been with us so long now, they're more like young adults. You will meet our assisted volunteers. There's 26 of them at the moment. They all come with carers. This is a free program, as is our material aid program. There's no charge to what we do. It's about giving. Our assisted volunteers program, as I said, 26 participants at the moment. along with their carers, and they're there every day of the week. We'd be lost without them. Running an op shop the size of the one down the road is a lot of work. The fairies don't come in at night and make it all just appear. There's a lot of hands-on work behind the scenes. If you're familiar with our shop, you'll know that we sell eggs. We sell them as a fundraiser. It's a program that started about 5 years ago. We had a contact who had been made redundant and was going to start a little egg business. And he came and said, "Mel, would you have a go at selling some eggs for me?" And it was one of those situations where you go, "Oh, I kind of feel like I have to say yes, but I don't want to say yes. But all right, we'll say yes and we'll give it a go." Every week now, just at this one shop, we sell around 1,200 dozen eggs, and they all need to be packed into dozens. And our team of kids do such an amazing job of this. Being the number one egg packer on any given day is quite the title, and it's a hotly contested title. But I think what it's really reflective of is the community that supports Helping Hands' mission. Everybody knows somebody or has somebody in their family with special needs, everybody. And so to not represent that in our organization just doesn't make sense to us. Our customers love being involved. 1,200 dozen eggs a week. They come on trays like these big ones. We've never bought an egg carton. We've never had to, because our customers collect them and they donate them. And so it's become quite a circular program with lots of involvement on lots of different levels. If you haven't tried our eggs, they're well worth a go. They come from three different farms, and they're eggs that are too big for the supermarkets. So most often double yolkers. And very, very popular. When we were in lockdown, I was outside doing some gardening and the lady walked down the street and I said, "Oh, hello." She said, "I know who you are." I said, "Oh, hi, I'm Melanie." She goes, "I know. Have you got any eggs at your house? Because I'm out of eggs and I need eggs." And I was like, whoa. Every day, the first customers who come through our door are looking for their eggs. As I said, our assisted volunteers come in all shapes and sizes. And so Barry is 92. He's only just stopped riding his bike from Airport West to work every day. He's very excited because he lives in the same street that we're moving our new building to. So I reckon we're going to have Barry every day. That's my last slide. So 300 volunteers across all of our sites and a staff of 43, I think, at the moment. And the one thing they all have in common is that they want to help and they want to provide support. And when you can get a group of people with one common value together, then you've got the ability to make a real difference. And I think that's what we do every day. Thank you.
Now, Melanie, I can't let you stop because there is a particular challenge right at this moment.
There is a particular challenge.
Could you fill us in a little bit? Absolutely.
So, at the beginning of the year, we got a phone call to say that our lease was not going to be renewed. They were going to redevelop our site. And that was really hard news to take. We spent a lot of time looking for a new home. We knew we had to stay local for a whole host of reasons, because that's where our volunteers are, that's where our client base is, that's where our customers are, and there is a business side to running a charity. We can't afford to not have our shops running because it impacts our ability to keep our food programs running. So there's always a business side to any decision we make. We also knew that wherever we went had to be close to public transport, because a lot of our clients depend on public transport to get to us. There were lots of nights driving through the back streets of Airport West, and I think most of you would know a lot of the big old factories have already been redeveloped. Where we are at the moment, they're going to build 18 little concrete factories in the new year. So it was certainly a confronting time. We found a place in McIntosh Street that wasn't on the market yet, but we knew it was empty. And so we did a whole lot of research and we found the last people who rented it, and they put us in contact with the owners and the real estate agent. And it turns out that, yes, we could rent a portion of it. It's a huge site. We're only renting a quarter of it, and the quarter that we're renting is about 8,000 square meters. So it's a big space. What we didn't know was that it was owned by a big multinational company that had its headquarters in Singapore. So when we first put in the application, we had a team of people from this business come out to see us. And I guess when you reflect, that makes sense. Most people who think of an op shop don't think of a op shop like this. And so they came out and they came in a taxi, and the taxi parked in our car park and they left it running. And I thought, oh, this is not a good sign. They stayed for an hour and a half. They were super, super engaged in what we were doing. That led to more meetings and more conversations, and finally the offer of a lease. We went, ooh, we've got a home. We've found a home. What we didn't know was that lease then had to go to be approved by a board in Australia. And then once we had that, it had to go to Singapore to be approved by another board. And we're sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, the bulldozers are coming at Christmas time. Like, we need to hurry this up. Because just from the photos, you can see how much we've got to move. Yeah. We got a signed lease in September. The organization that owns the space have been great. They offered to do some pre-work to fix up the building that we were going to be using to the value of about $80,000. So that was really exciting for us. And they said, yeah, it'll be maybe six weeks. We'll have the keys in October. We still don't have the keys. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, but my guess it'll be mid-December. So we have a big job ahead of us. The one bit of news that I can share since we met, Gavin, the site that we're moving to has one existing building, which will be our shop, but what it doesn't have is a warehouse or a food pantry, and we have to build that. We've never really put our hands up and asked for help. We very much take the approach that we'll raise our own money, and then we know with certainty that it's there for our programs. But to build a shed and a pantry was going to cost $350,000, and we didn't have that money. For the last 7 months, we have worked very hard to lobby all levels of government. We have had every politician that you can think of through our doors, which has been a really big change for our organisation, because it's not what we're used to doing. We very much just fly under the radar, don't worry about marketing or anything like that. We just focus on what we do. But when you need to ask for that much money, you have to put yourself out there and say, come and look, come and see what we do. We actually got word last week from Ben Carroll, our local member, that our application has been approved. So very exciting. We're not allowed to share that publicly yet. We're not allowed to make any big announcements on social media, but we are very relieved. I don't know how long it's going to take from that phone call for the money to actually be in our bank account. Probably a while, but doesn't matter. We know that it's coming and that we have a path forward. We have also started our very first fundraising campaign. So we launched a GoFundMe online campaign, and we launched it on a Thursday night. And on the Friday morning, I got a phone call from a guy called John, who happened to be the bureau chief of A Current Affair. And he had seen our story and said, let us come and help. Let's tell your story. I'm sure we can help you raise some money. That's a really big thing for our organization because offers like that are very double-sided. Yes, it's great to try and tell our story to raise some money, but what it also does is promotes our aid service, and we're already at capacity.
Mm.
Our story went to air a couple of weeks ago. They did a beautiful job. We were nervous, but they did a beautiful job. I can tell you before that little piece even finished airing that we'd already had 3 emails from people to say, can you help me? One lady drove from Seymour last week to come and get food because there was just nothing in her area that she could access. So the need is very real. We have since then raised about $40,000. So we're well on our way. We've got a long way to go, but we're trusting that we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Now, folk might have a few questions. I've just got a little something to share, and then we're going to have a time just praying with Melanie. So, questions. Speak up.
So the government, they're not giving any money?
Well, they're giving us $350,000 as a once-off. To be fair, we've never really asked them for money. And I think the reason that we've been able to get agreement and support is because of that. We've had Bill Shorten, Danny Pearson, Lizzie Black, everybody that you can think of have come. And it was really encouraging to have Bill Shorten sit at our dining room table and say, I can look at this place and I can tell you with everything I've seen, there is no government agency who can do the work that you're doing. It's taken a long time for that to turn into, yes, we're going to support you. The treasurer apparently looks after a pool of money that comes from Pokies revenue. It is very tightly guarded. It can only be used for community-based, 100% community-based projects. And our application has gone through all of the reviews and, yeah, we got the yes. So, yeah. They do. So we pick up from 8 supermarkets every day as part of our food program. We're very grateful to have been able to establish a strong relationship with Costco out in Epping. We are the first charity that they deal with. Is it a pain to drive out to Epping every day? Yes, it is. But what comes back is absolutely worth it. They do a great job. Are they? Well, hopefully we can pick up from there as well. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, some of the, yeah, look, the supermarkets support us as part of a program. We have a good relationship with Lamana, which we're hoping to grow. They have been very supportive. But I think what we're feeling at the moment is that demand is going to increase. Food Bank called last week to say we need to start putting in some restrictions on what you can order because, Mel, we're running out of food. Every charity is facing the same dilemma at the moment. So we need to, when I say we order from Food Bank, it's about 30 pallets of food every week that they deliver for us. And we are very proactively at the moment looking to work with smaller local businesses, with wholesalers, anybody who can, you know, if the packaging's wrong or it's near its use by date, don't throw it in the bin. Like we've got a group of people who can really benefit. So that, yeah, that's our focus at the moment. Yeah, thank you. No more, Liz? That's a tricky question because we closed it down during COVID. But let me tell you the background. So I was working at the Uniting Church in North Essendon when this started. And it started because we had combined three congregations. We were building a new facility at their Killer Road site. And it was time to actually come together as a congregation and do something that was a bit more outward focused. We'd had a letter from the Uniting Church in Kyabram. A lot of women were struggling as a result of the drought, and they asked if we could put some packs together, some pamper packs that would help. We did that, and we got to go up there and give them to the people who were going to be using them. And we got to have a conversation. We got to talk about what help would really look like, because it's great to give somebody some shampoo and conditioner, but that doesn't actually help the day-to-day, you know, the day-to-day of their lives. There was one woman in particular who I think changed the course of certainly my life. She was a dairy farmer's wife. She had three kids. She was pretty active in the local community. They were doing it really tough. And she had been asked to speak at a Victorian Farmers Federation gathering in Bendigo. And she said, "Mel, I've saved the $40 to buy myself a new top to wear. I'm not nervous. I know I can stand up and do it, but I haven't got the money I need to drive to Bendigo. I haven't got the petrol money. So if you could get some city people to donate their clothes and bring them up here, that would be amazing." And so we went, well, I reckon that's something we can do. And we put the call out, and in 8 weeks we had about 2 ton of clothing. And we went, oh, maybe we've bitten off a little bit more than we can chew. We, this particular lady, her name was Leanne. She lives in Calaville. The first time I drove to Calaville, I drove straight through the main street without even knowing that I had driven through a town. I think it's got a population of 14. There's a little community hall in Calaville, and we had said that we would bring all these clothes up and we would turn that hall into an op shop for the community. Our initial thinking was we would just give everything away, but after lots of conversation, I guess what we learned is that rural families in particular do not like being on the receiving end of aid. And so we agreed that everything would be a dollar. It took us 3 days to hang everything. You know, we're doing it now, completely different. Now I know what I'm doing. But back then, we were going in blind. We had local farmers and school kids and the local volunteer firefighters come and help us turn this hall into an op shop. And I was there with two members of my congregation, and I said to Jim, what are we going to do if no one comes tomorrow? What are we going to do with it? We opened the next morning, and in the first hour there was already $1,200 in the tin. So we had hit upon a real need. We knew we wanted to continue it, so we raised some money. We brought a truck, which was our first. It was an old dental dolly van that used to go around to the schools, and we turned it into a mobile op shop. And we did that for a couple of years right across rural Victoria. And from there, I guess word spread and our program grew. So we wouldn't just be arriving as a mobile op shop. We would be arriving with the Salvation Army on board and drought counsellors on board. And we would fill the middle of our food, of our clothes van with food. And it just grew and grew from there. I guess those relationships still stand strong today. We run that program, but we flip it. So last week we had 57 ladies get on a bus from Lockington and come down and spend a day with us in Melbourne. If I can bring them here, I can give them access to so much more than I can trying to load a van. I can pack clothes in a van, but I can't pack all the other stuff that we have. It's a great day out for them. And that's the important part. It's a day to reconnect, to be away from their problems. Liz, that led to us actually opening an op shop in a small community called Bridgewater on Loddon. So it's just outside of Inglewood, and we were able to rent a small church and set up an ongoing op shop there with all of the money raised going back into that local community. During COVID, it became very hard to manage. The lady who we had running it became very ill, and there was no traffic. And there was a very clear message at that time, and I guess it was driven by fear. They didn't want Melbourne people who were probably going to bring COVID with them heading up that highway. We spent a lot of time trying to work out what to do. There was a food pantry attached to that program. We spoke to lots of members of the local community there. Nobody felt that they had the volunteer base to be able to run our op shop. So we closed down the op shop and brought everything back to Melbourne. But we gifted our food program to a small community group up there, and it still runs today. The guy who has taken over was down last week picking up. So yeah, it's still going strong.
Thank you. I'll just invite you to sit for a moment. You've been talking quite a bit.
Sorry.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way. Well, I learnt more today about the extent of the vision and the extent of the need, which is quite extraordinary. In thinking about just a few words, just to put this in some sense of context, I was reading in Isaiah 58, and here the prophet is speaking on behalf of God and speaking into the religious activity, particularly that of fasting. Fasting had a bit of a pattern, and it was a religious activity. Everyone did the right thing before God. And God says this: "Is not the kind of fasting I have chosen to loose the chains of injustice, and to untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him, and not turn away from your own flesh and blood." All of humanity, in a very real sense, is our flesh and blood. We share this under God. And personally, as I read those words from the prophet Isaiah, it makes you uncomfortable, because it talks about things we're not inclined to do, to open our homes, to be free, to give. This is the heart of God. Melanie, thank you for coming and sharing today. In many ways, you exemplify this, because you've opened your life to the needy. And for we who are comfortable in our middle class, that's challenging. But there's the invitation for us to stretch out a bit more personally, not just through Helping Hands Mission and helping you, but in our daily lives. I'm reminded that it's easy to give to a mission who engage the needy, and we can give our money away but still have the comfort. But to, in our own personal lives, take a leaf out of your book and open our doors, open our boundaries to people that we might otherwise not engage, the needy that are all around us. And you've reminded us today, well, not reminded us, you've brought to our minds the extent of the need that is in our community right at this time. So thank you. I asked Melanie if she'd like some prayer, and that we might pray for you. I invite you to stand again. You've had your little rest. That's all you're getting. Particularly Doug and Liz, I invite you to come forward. I'm going to ask John to pray over you. There might be others who would like to just move this out of the way. To come and stand with Melanie. I'm orchestrating this. if there's someone else, anyone, you'd like to come forward or just stand and stretch out your hand towards Melanie. I'm sure that this has taken a huge toll in your life. You've given so much. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
It's a burden as well as a joy.
Father, we want to thank you this morning for the organization of Helping Hand. And Lord, all those organizations are out there. And I think Melanie's brought it to our attention that how desperate the need is for people to give. And Lord, Mel has given her life to assist others and to build an incredible organization. So Lord, as she has blessed so many other people, we as a congregation and us standing here, bless you, Mel, in the name of Jesus. And thank you for all your good work and for what you do. And so, Father, would you prosper the Helping Hand even further? And Lord, you know the needs of what they need, the factory and all the other stuff and the huge move they're about to make. But Lord, would you put your hand upon that and just make it so smooth? And Lord, in the busyness of Mel's life, that you would give her time out, give her peace in her heart and in her mind. And Lord, that you are in charge. And I thank you in Jesus' name.